Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network since 2009. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and on today's show, we have Amy Galesian. She is a specialty foods operations manager at High Lawn Farm, based in Lee, Massachusetts. She's been both a cheesemaker and a cheesemonger since 2018 and has a degree in agriculture and heritage dairy production. I'm super excited to catch up with her. They just had the Massachusetts Cheese Fest, and I really want to learn more about High Lawn Farm. So, Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Kara. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to chat about High Lawn and Massachusetts.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So can you tell us, I mean, the pictures online looked amazing for the Cheese Festival. How does that come together? Is that a lot of work on your side with High Lawn, or is that like a group project with all the cheesemakers in Massachusetts?
Yeah, so when I started working at High Lawn Farm, the Massachusetts Cheese Guild approached me and said that they had been discussing the festival there for 2020. And that never happened. And if we were interested in doing it this year. And we sort of discussed with High Lawn celebrating 100 years, we had a whole summer of events and fun things going on. And we thought doing the Cheese Festival would be a really great way to sort of close off the summer and also get people excited about cheese out in the Berkshires in Western Massachusetts. So it was actually the first time we've ever hosted it at High Lawn Farm. A whole new committee putting it together. And it was a lot of work, but it ended up being absolutely incredible. Great turnout, awesome producers, so much fun. And really a wonderful experience for me, and I think for all of our producers. We were all walked away really, really happy with it. But the Guild put a lot of work into it. We started planning, and yeah.
So I saw there were like 13 cheesemakers that were in on this. They all were like very impressive to me. If you're like a new cheesemaker, how do you sort of break into a guild like this? Is it a hard process or easy? What happened?
It's pretty easy for cheesemakers to join the Cheese Guild. And actually, for the Massachusetts Cheese Guild, we have multiple membership levels. So there's a cheese lovers membership level, which anybody from the public can join. And that gets you some, you know, little perks here and there, as well as free attendance of the festival. And then if you're a producer, that's sort of a different level. And then there's also businesses. We had a lot of support from local shops. Cheese shops and wine and beer shops to help put this together, who are also on the guild. So it's a cool collaboration. There's not a ton of Massachusetts cheese producers. We also invited a couple from Connecticut and New York to sort of add a few more variation. And I was really happy to have them there. The Massachusetts Guild is very welcoming to all and any. So it's pretty easy to join. You just hop on the website and say that you're interested.
And I'm sure there's a little bit of a vetting process, like you do have to make cheese. But overall, I'm stoked to see that that like you had like a lot of different cool people.
Yeah, there is a little bit of a vetting process for makers in the festival. So to be in the festival, you do have to have specific permits, registrations, licenses, inspections, and be in compliance with laws to be able to sell your products. So not anybody can have a table there. But for the guild, just about anybody can join, depending how active they are. People don't always continue. And not everybody in the guild has to come to every single meeting.
Very cool. Well, that's a good thing to know because absolutely. Because I understand sometimes taking on this sort of, I don't know if it's work, but you know, another thing like this can be overwhelming to some types of people. And I'm glad to hear that it's open. It's a very open process and people, you guys are looking for more people to be in this guild. I think cheese guilds are really wonderful. They help, bring more advantages when people work in groups to further cheese and creamery development in the state. So that's really, really cool. Well, now I kind of want to bring it about to you and Hylon and because I didn't realize, you know, I always kind of look at the LinkedIn background, so you'll have to excuse my little detective work here, but I saw that you went to Hampshire College and got a heritage dairy production degree. What is that like? Like, what is that like? I'm curious. Yeah. And then like, how does it feel to then be at Hylon because they have such a big history with that?
Yeah. So awesome. It's really cool to work with jerseys. When I was at Hampshire College, I worked with the Dutch Belted there, and they are a critically endangered species of dairy cow. They're actually a tri-purpose dairy cow. And I studied them and I found them to be really fascinating and have a lot of history and a lot of important traits that you don't find in Holsteins these days that have sort of been bred out of your typical dairy cow. And that was sort of one of the things when I started studying dairy management, I wanted to go into agriculture and dairy farming. When I started studying heritage breeds, they don't produce quite as much milk, but it's of a different and typically higher quality. And that's sort of when I transitioned into the value added products and specifically cheese. So a lot of towns and villages in France have a lot of regionality with their cow breeds to the cheese that they make to being very specific to that town. And I found that very interesting. I did some studying there and learned with different farmers who milk different breeds of cows and how important that was and the land and the agriculture was to the cheese. And to be able to work with Jerseys now, who are also they're still one of the big main five dairy breeds, but their milk quality is very, very different than your typical Holstein dairy cow.
Right. And so when I was looking at the website for Hylon, it's very clear in the storyline that there's a woman by the name of Marjorie Field, who is, I guess, an ancestral family member who may have owned the farm at one point. You can clarify this. Yeah, and just like her way of studying the Jersey cow, how it furthered science for the breed. I mean, if you would like to elaborate more on this, my mind was blown because I was like, wow, this is like a true scientist before it was allowed. And I think it's very cool to talk about. So if you don't mind just like explaining it to the listeners, I was just really moved by it.
Yeah, so Marjorie Wild started breeding the Jerseys at Hylon in 1934. And one of her things was milk quality. And so she was breeding for very specific traits, which is something that a lot of dairy farmers do and has become basically the norm today. But back in the day when she was doing it, she was sort of almost revolutionizing the breed and turning the breed into what it is now and became... I mean, very, very well recognized throughout the Jersey Association, producing some of the best quality cows out there, shipping them to farms all over the country and the world, and growing the Jersey breed. She had such a huge part in that. And not only that, but to know that that was a woman, and to know that she sort of laid the footwork or sort of built the path to now be, we're still woman owned. And most of our management is also women. And it's really cool to sort of follow in her footsteps and recognize that legacy that we're trying to carry on at Hylon. And we think about that every single day and all of the products we produce and sort of how that's been expanding as the market has changed. And we still have a lot, all of her records. And we can trace our cows, our herd back almost 17 generations, basically to her work in 1934. And that's incredible to have all of that available to us. And we're still trying to breed very consciously for very specific, very high quality milk traits.
Wow. I can't, that's a lot of history to have. I mean, that's pretty cool. 17, that's not a number you often hear for generations. That's really, really cool.
No, it's incredible. And to work, to follow that legacy sort of, it really gives everything that we do, it puts a lot of things in perspective, to have that history and that aim for quality.
So, in your day-to-day job, because I actually don't think I've met anyone by your job, specialty operations manager, or wait, am I saying that right? I don't know what that title means. And I'm curious if you can explain to me what it encompasses and what your day-to-day is like.
Yeah. So we only started making cheese at Hylon in like 2019, 2020. So cheese is relatively new. We have been doing fluid milk since 1923 for 100 years. We've been delivering fluid milk across Boston, the Berkshires. We're just starting to expand that, but we got into cheese in that time. I came on board here in 2022, beginning of the year. And so my role, I studied cheesemaking with Matthew Bridgeford at Jacobs and Bridgeford in Indiana for a little bit after being a cheesemonger after graduating. And so my role sort of encompasses all of those roles into one, which is incredible to have found a position where I can do a little bit of everything, everything that I studied, everything that I've worked in past jobs and taken skills from each part of that. So everything from animal management, the way that we're breeding, the way that we're feeding. I talk to our farmers every single day. And part of what I do is I sort of translate what they tell me to our cheesemaker to make it so that we all are working well unitedly. Because so much of what we do relies on the farm and the animals and how they're being cared for and everything that they produce. I feel lucky because I get to sort of combine all of the roles, past job experiences, and things that I've studied into this one position. So I work with our farmers, I work with our head cheesemaker, I work with our dairy plant manager, I work with our head ice cream maker. I do a lot of our sort of sales and work really closely with cheesemongers who sell our cheese and smaller cheese shops, chefs, people who are looking for something a little bit more specific for their customers, and I can help them build that. And I can help decide, you know, I think this would be really great on your menu and this would be a really good pairing. And I help with doing our classes, and we have a little retail shop on site where we scoop ice cream and we sell our cheeses. And so I also do trainings with that staff to tell them about cheese tasting and what it should taste like and how do you find certain notes. How we should wrap cheese, the best way to care for it, facing it, and making it presentable, and even label placement, stuff like that, that as a cheesemonger, I use those skills every day. And then I also help a lot with our food safety and those programs as well. So lots going on every day, all the time.
Yeah. So, okay. I'm sorry. I'm taking in a lot of what you just said, and you are a Renaissance woman. You are like many great creamery people that I know, doing everything from sales marketing to production stuff to really a translator for many, many pathways. It's very impressive. I'm glad you're organized, and I hope to God you're organized at least to do that kind of job, because it sounds like a lot of cool stuff you're doing. I guess that now in relation to that, I just want to make it a little more clear for the listeners, because when I was looking at everything and I've seen your products in stores, you guys do fluid milk, you do butter, which I'm mm-hmm. curious if it's cultured or not. There's ice cream, and then there's like 8 different types of cheeses. Is that correct?
That's about right. So we do fluid milk, heavy cream, half and half, a chocolate milk, and eggnog seasonally. And then we make our own ice cream base, and we make 18 flavors of ice cream that we sell locally from our shop, and then we do wholesale that as well to other local shops. And then we do, yes, butter. So we have a cultured butter, an uncultured butter, And then we also do a ghee. And we have about eight or nine cheeses sort of flowing through. And what I like about our selection, what also makes our selection really challenging, is that we have one from each sort of family of cheese. So we have a bloomy rind, a washed rind, a couple hard pressed. We have a cheddar, we have a blue, and it keeps things really exciting because it's not what I would recommend to somebody just starting to make cheese, trying to do that. but we have fun with it.
So my follow-up question to you is, because there is so much going on, is what is the space like? Is there a lot of space at High Lawn? Like, what are the grounds like? How many cows do you guys have? I'm sorry, that's a two-parter, but like, I would imagine you need space to make all of these products.
Yes. So first of all, the space is absolutely beautiful. So it almost looks like an old castle sort of village. And that was very intentional with the architecture. And it looks exactly the way, all of the buildings look exactly the way they did 100 years ago. So walking to work every day is just a beautiful sight. Our dairy plant where we process and bottle and pasteurize our milk, it was built in 2016. And that's a good space. But actually, one of the other things I'm working on right now is designing to build a new production space for our cheese facility. So that would be on farm, and that would be something where we can invite our shop visitors to walk through and sort of see the cheese making process. Our current space is sort of a retrofit, trying to see, make it work. Sort of as we were starting to make cheese, we figured let's start small. It's been a big hit. It's been doing really, really well. And we're looking into expanding that. We're milking 120 cows right now. We have actually the Lely A4 robots. And those help to save a lot on labor for our farm staff, allowing them to sort of focus on animal welfare, animal quality, the health and individual needs of each animal instead of spending so much time in the milking parlor. And I also feel really lucky that I used to work with robots on a different farm. So I have a good understanding of that as well, and can sort of talk and troubleshoot with them as well, or sort of how that impacts our milk. So lots going on. It's quite a big farm. We're about 1,600 acre farm. We only actually farm about 700 acres, and the rest is preserved woodland. So it's mountains, hills, and forest lands that are basically untouched. We do a little bit of land management in there to keep them in control, but we don't have, you know, we're not plowing, not planting or growing anything in that space. And that's a huge part for the family, for the farm, is we want to preserve and keep the Berkshires green.
Yeah, man, that's okay. So I just want to leave this out here for the listeners to digest and enjoy, because again, another bucolic, awesome cheese space. I want to just let the listeners know we're going to just take a quick break right now. I'm Kara Warren. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City, Long Island, and Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
All right. Welcome back, everyone, to Cutting the Curd. I'm here, your host, Kara Warren. I'm here with Amy of Hylon Farm, and we're talking about all the cool things about Hylon, about how Amy can do everything at a cheesemaking facility and be a cheesemonger and run all these paths and in between. I'm trying to keep up with her. I am very impressed by what she's doing. I guess my next thing is a little bit of a softball, but I'm curious now, what is your go-to Hylon product? Like, what is it, a cheese? Is it ice cream? What is your most delicious thing to you right now?
It would be between our cheese and our butter. And honestly, every time I go out of town, I miss our milk. I miss going to my local coffee shop and getting the best cappuccino because they use Hylon milk and it makes all of the difference. Our butter has this golden hue and I love cooking with that and using that, spreading it on my bread. And I feel like it just tastes extra good. Once you have that, you kind of can't go back to regular butter, and that's a challenge. But then cheese-wise, I think the cheese that I am loving the most right now is the Siegfried's Pride, which is our sort of more alpine style, brandy, smear-ripened, wash-drying sort of thing, aged for a year. And I think that cheese is gonna take off and it's really gonna go places. I'm really loving that profile right now.
Is it available in retail stores yet, or is it just aging out?
Yes, it is available in retail stores. So we've got it in a couple retail stores around, mostly locally. I think there's one shop in Rhode Island that I've sent a couple wheels to. And there's a couple other smaller shops that I work directly with those cheesemongers. And when they have space in their case, they'll bring a wheel in. And that always makes me happy because as a former cheesemonger, I really loved working with those producers who are sort of just getting out there with cheeses. And it is also available at our shop. The other cheese, sorry, there's one other cheese I want to talk about is the Smorbier, which is our newest cheese. And that's one that our head cheesemaker, Matt, and myself sort of dreamt up this idea. And it's just been released this year, kind of in the last 6 months or so. And we're both super, super excited about it. So it's a Morbier style. It's a washed curd and a smear ripened rind with the bee linens, kind of very red pink rind. And it has, instead of using ash through the center, we use a hot pepper blend from a local pepper farm. And working with one, the pepper farm and how the peppers change kind of seasonally, what we can get is going to change the spice level in the cheese, and working with Matt to sort of figure out how we're going to do a Morbier style cheese has been the most fun and also the most rewarding to have this delicious cheese actually be a reality now.
That's very cool. So is the cheese, is it like an evening and, like a morning milk and an evening milk separated by the spice in between? Or is it just purely like an aesthetic cool thing?
Yeah, it's mostly aesthetic. So we sort of had experimented with a pepper jack. We had experimented with a pepper cheddar, and we also wanted to do a washed curd. And so combining, we really wanted to use these peppers from Kitchen Garden Farm. That was sort of the inspiration to it. So combining all of those ideas and deciding, let's go for a Morbier style. We don't do the morning milk and the evening milk. It's mostly for aesthetics, but it is very aesthetically pleasing to have this kind of rich, buttery paste cut by a bright red line through the center. And it's also delicious. And it sort of balances, yeah, too, with the sweetness of the washed curd with a little like spicy heat from the peppers.
Yeah, I'm really into that idea. I think I have to find that somewhere in the New York, Massachusetts area. I mean, this all sounds really good. And it's funny because like I've seen the milk around, I've seen the ice cream around. So I'm glad to see you guys are doing the cheese thing. I had a follow-up question on the milk. Is it non-homogenized or lightly pasteurized? Because I feel like I've been trying to find milk that's not too pasteurized. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so we do use an HTST, and our milk is homogenized. It's not ultra pasteurized, and it's not sent through the homogenizer at as high of a pressure as some commercial processors do. So that does occasionally, and it does have an impact on the shelf life. So a lot of ultra pasteurized milk, and I've seen it in the grocery store myself, will have a shelf life of 30 to 40 to sometimes longer days. Our milk only has an 18-day shelf life, and that's something that kind of comes with working with a more fragile, special product. But it is super high in fat, protein, calcium, magnesium, incredible minerals and vitamins that are naturally present in Jersey milk, that because we don't ultra process it and ultra pasteurize it, they remain in the milk. And the flavor of it is different. It also froths incredibly well for baristas, which was something I didn't really realize that you could, I didn't realize it had that big of an impact until I started drinking cappuccinos that were made with Hylon milk and realizing how different it is, how much better the froth is. And I talk to baristas and they go, yeah, once I start using that milk, it's just so different. And that's really rewarding to hear, because that goes all the way back to Marjorie Wilde.
Yeah, no, see, Amy, thank you. That was perfect. I want to thank you for coming on the show today. Like, I mean, I feel like I could talk to you all day. This is I can nerd out all day about the dairy stuff. So thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was, I'm super, super excited about the future of Hylon cheeses.
Totally, totally. Yeah, I'm gonna keep a lookout for them. But okay, cool. So I'm just gonna give some information to our listeners right now. You can please follow Amy on Instagram at AmyEGulz, and Hylon Farm. You can follow them at Hylon Farm or go to their website hylonfarm.com. Plus, you can follow us at Cutting the Curd and myself at Kara Warren. And please listen and subscribe to Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, don't forget to give us a 5-star review. That counts and it helps us. So wherever you listen to your podcast, please give us a review. Thanks and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Aweli, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, a French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.